is the official podcast of geekimprovement.com, where we help you find and keep track of things to geek out about. I'm your host, Alexis Santos, and to my right is the professor of Pokemon at the University of Chicago, Illinois, Mr. Terry Jackson.
Terry? You know, I ain't got no problem. Oh, I cut you off. Didn't mean to cut you off, but I ain't got no problem being a professor of Pokemon, okay? Even if that's trying to mock me, I'm okay with that. But right now, I'm a professor of getting eaten alive by horror crows. We'll talk about this later, though.
Yes, and Terry's resume is now growing. He's gone from professor of cookie clicking, professor of... remember what it was. Wait, what?
It was professor of cookie clicking, then it was professor... Ah, God damn it!
Well, Alexis, Terry, it seems to me that Terry keeps switching universities. He must be doing something terribly wrong if each one wants to kick him out.
Well,
they should
not
quit looking in the closet, okay? That's my personal space.
I mean,
he might end up as professor at the University of Phoenix next week.
He might be a visiting
That's David,
professor.
By the way, he's joining us this week again too.
Exactly, the dulcet tones of David, Mr. David Janovich, are coming through your speakers or your headphones or your earbuds or whatever you might be happening to listen to this podcast to.
Through your soul.
Through your soul. Oh, hopefully not. Then you got to get that checked out. You know, maybe an exorcism needs to be in place.
You mean you can't do that too? I think that's what I'm doing too with the freaking horror crows. Fucking horror crows.
So, today is Sunday, December 1st, and we have been missing in action for about 2 weeks now.
2 weeks? How's it going podcast the week before last week. Yeah.
That was because we held you hostage to it, Terry.
Well, not really.
Hostage? I showed up and I was sick as balls.
So, it was emotional torture, Terry.
So first of all, we really should say happy Thanksgiving. You had a good holiday. Filled yourself up with lots of turkey.
Enjoy that turkey for the rest of your living month.
Yes. For the next week or so.
We will still be eating turkey. When Christmas comes around, we'll be adding more turkey to the
thing. What are you talking about? Our turkey's already gone. That's what happens with living with a bunch of...
our turkey's still half... gelled in the fridge. We gotta tear it apart.
Have gelled?
Well, you know what happens when turkey fat when it gets cold?
Yeah.
It turns into a jelly.
Not a problem. I fried it in a pan. And then I fried what was left of the mat. Our microwave broke, which was horrible, so then I just deep fried everything in a pan, which became wonderful. Because everything absorbed the flavor of ham and turkey fat, and really the only word for it is or
Well, you know, now we teased in the last podcast that we were working on something, and now...
And no, it's not your mom. That's for next week.
And now is finally the time to reveal it. In the fall, we started working on something called Quest Foundry. It is a quest creator for pen and paper RPGs where you can create, buy, sell, and share quests for pen and paper RPGs. We have coded an alpha version of it. We're mostly programmers here. Not when it comes to design, our skills have not progressed since kindergarten. So while there's the alpha version is fully working, and it's got a basic feature set that we want to build that out to, we've put the project up on Indiegogo so we can hire a designer to really make it shine. So... the guy we have on deck is Haldor Dory Bjarnason. He's worked for Sega, Big Fish Games, and Nickelodeon. He's worked on games that have been published by them as an art director. Well, he's got a very slick style, and he's from Iceland. So if that's not enough credit for a kind of RPG...
Just to give this guy more backing, the moment Alexis started talking about him... That song that plays in Lord of the Rings while Gandalf dies just started playing on my headphones, okay? Out of nowhere. So in my mind, that gives him even more credibility.
Terry, you were listening to music while you're podcasting. Oh, what a shame.
No, I'm going over the notes. I can't help with the website plays, Alexis.
Oh, yes. Back to the crow murmuring. But yeah, if you head on over to questfoundry.com, you will be directed to the Kickstarter page, and you'll see a video starring myself, Terry, and David for about the first 30 to 40 seconds or so.
You'll have to hold your arousal, people.
Prepare yourself. Yeah, you don't know what that amount of sexitude can do to you. Well, from me and David, Alexis is just like the toothpick.
And yeah, we have we give an explanation of what it does. So I guess we should do that here. So essentially, we thought it's buying Quest can be pricey. You know, if you want to go out to your local comic book shop or whatever and pick up one of those hardcover modules or something, that can be pretty expensive. And then oftentimes, a lot of people create their own. But, you know, they just leave them, they either leave them in a Word file on their computer, or they have, like, binders filled with them, and they're just there, they collect dust after maybe, you know, you play it a couple times.
It's not easy to be able to share it, so other people can enjoy your creation, right?
Right. So now, with Quest Foundry, you'll be able to both share it, and if you want to make a buck, you can sell your quests, you can name your price. And we'll have it, so it'll be essentially a bazaar or a marketplace for your quests. So you can find free ones and buy some, hopefully for cheap. Again, the pricing is up to you guys, essentially.
And there will be our own personal quests made by, like, a couple of them have already underworked by me and David ourselves. If you like murder mysteries... If you like murder mysteries and sexually confused dwarves, don't miss out.
The best part of making these things is tossing all of our ideas into a giant forge and burning them into giant, and you know, the tiny little bits, and then pouring them out into a mold.
It's from a there, we took very labor-intensive process.
We took a couple hammers and Terry's brother's head, because it's really thick, and started pounding it until it started taking shape. And right now we're at the point where we're chiseling in the mystic runes of wording inside of them.
And that are how our quests are produced. But really, that's the admin side.
That's the mark of quality.
The public-facing side, actually how you create quests, is all within your browser. So instead of having to, you know, pull up a Word doc and like exporting it as a PDF or something, worrying about layout, we handle all that for you. So what you do is you just like add a quest, like a story module or like a header module or an encounter module, and what you just like click on the module and you just start typing. You can have basic text markup, so bold, italics, underline, you know, right adjust, left adjust, and if you want to create a monster or, you know, in an encounter, you just like hit the create a monster button. You can plug in all its stats and just reorganize stuff with drag and drop. Right now it's, you know, it's pretty minimal, bare, you know, bare bones what you'll see in the video, but our hope is to make it slick with this with the designer's help, and you know, with minimum effort on your part, you'll just be plugging in the stuff, and then eventually we hope to rival the layout that you'd normally see in like a book or something. So it might take a while, but that's what we've been on doing. And if you'd like to help us out, we are having a relatively short campaign here on Indiegogo. 22 days left, or 21 days, I think. We're going to essentially end the campaign at December 23rd at midnight because, well, you know, we don't want to go past Christmas. And once Christmas tears, nobody cares about anything, including ourselves. You know, we just want to relax. So we're having a fairly short campaign, and the lowest buy-in is essentially $7 at the bard level. We've named each of our levels after different classes and whatnot.
So why don't we give them what are some of them, Alexis?
All right, so bard at $7 gives you early access and a backer badge on the forums, so you can show that you're a supporter. If you wanna, you know, give us a little bit more, you can pay $15 and you'll be a cleric. You'll get everything before, and you'll get one of our in-house quests for free. So, like Terry and David mentioned, that'll be one of the quests that that we've made, and it'll be yours to have, to keep. $25 is the monk level, so you'll get early access, a backer badge on the forums, and a vinyl sticker, plus 3 of our in-house quests. And then, of course, $50 for the warrior. You get everything before that, plus our Geeks Kill Dragons t-shirt, which we've had another designer, not Mr. Haldor, design a dragon, and we've got it on a vinyl sticker that we'll send out. Let's see, $75 is the wizard level. You get all that, plus, let's see, 4 of our in-house quests, and you keep an extra 5% of revenue from your quest sales. That brings you to 80%. So by default, what we're thinking is having 75%, you get to keep 75% of of your revenue, and we get 25% to keep the lights on here, and so we can keep, you know, developing to make it, you know, make the website really shine and build more features. $100 is the paladin level. You get all of that plus 10% of your revenue, an extra 10%, so that brings you up to 85%. And you get creative input into one of our quests, so you can tell us, you know, what you want to see, if you want to be immortalized in a character or whatever. $200 is the warlock level, and you get all of that. But you also get, let's see, I should... 15% of the revenue, you know, you keep an extra 15%, so now you get to keep 90% of your revenue. You get the input into, you know, a quest that we make, plus free access to each and every homebrew quest we ever make at Quest Foundry. Remember, that doesn't include quests other folks make. And lastly, the highest level here is $500 at Dungeon Master, so that gives you everything before, plus you keep all of your revenue, 100% of it. If we add subscription options in the future, they won't apply to you, so long as, you know, if you don't need us out of house and web server somehow. But, yeah. These are our tiers, so you can head over to questfoundry.com, and if you've got any questions, feel free to tweet at us, email us.
I got one.
Oh, yeah.
Why the hell is warrior above cleric? A warrior would not be able to survive without a cleric.
Because clerics are squishy.
So is your mom.
So are mages.
Yeah, but mages... I think
our powerhouses. Okay, I have no problem with where the mage is, and I'm happy that the wizard is above the warrior. I'm just saying, why would a warrior be above a cleric? Because a warrior's life depends on that cleric.
Clerics are squishy.
Terry, who won the fight, Garrosh or Little Chin?
You know what? It doesn't matter, okay? I played a cleric when we played D&D. No. Okay, I played a cleric when we played D&D, and who carried you in Jordan's balls, all right? Who carried you?
Alexis did.
No. How many times did I have to revive you or Jordan and heal you and use my fantabulous dwarf powers?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, a dwarf cleric.
For the record, I really didn't feel that I'm oddly weirded out by the fact that I got so worked up over that, because me, I'm pretty indifferent to it, but I think Fargrim took exception to it.
Oh, this
that's my dwarf cleric.
This reminds me, I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but some of the, starting at $50 and up, each level has, we'll get a t-shirt, which has that dragon illustration, and so far we thought it'd be pretty cool to say on the bottom of the shirt, Geeks Kill Dragons, because really, who else will?
So. That's my excuse for everything now.
I mean, it might change depending on what you guys want to see.
About the things they've been through, they should see the things that I've been through. I've killed a dragon. Also, I can't tell you how many times I've died.
So, oh yeah, but you know, of course, there's the spirit healer or whatever. So you can mm-hmm. come back without much cost to life and limb, the permanent loss that is.
Ooh. I'm going to call off from Alexis. I won't be able to work on GI or anything next week because I have resurrection sickness.
After this campaign is over, we might all have a bit of that. But we're asking for $4,910 in the next 20 or so days. And all of that will go towards hiring the designer, the t-shirts and the stickers, and also making sure we have enough money after the Indiegogo and PayPal fees. So none of it will be profit for ourselves. It'll all, you know, just be towards getting this thing off the ground. And this is, we hope it to be a trend, essentially. This is just one of a few projects that we want to work on that we've got boiling away in the Geek Improvement Labs.
It's the only project in the Geek Improvement Labs that has been, let's say, hasn't almost led to a class, you know, X extinction event. So,
yeah, it's,
you know.
Science cannot progress without heaps of dead monkeys, okay? We've been over this before.
It's true. All right, so we've got something here from Mr. P.H. Mullins on Twitter, also known as Patrick. He's linked us to DMing for your toddler. He's got a little one, and he's also Patrick's also a fan of Dungeons & Dragons, pen and paper RPGs, and he thought, you know, this sounds really cool. And over at Gygax Magazine, they've got, by Cory Doctorow, actually, an article about DMing for your toddler. So essentially, Mr. Doctorow got a flying hamster stuffed animal that his daughter has, and, like, put it in like behind this castle.
Stuffed animal for a moment, I was really excited about the prospect of a flying hamster, and then what it might taste like.
Deep fried, of course. That's the only way to eat them. I mean, you don't want to fillet them because there's not enough meat. It'll ruin the hamster for you. Panko breading. Anyway, so he put the hamster behind like a little castle, a fortress, and he put some minifigs in front of it, saying, "Okay, your hamster's in danger. You got to go save it." And so he used D20s and some die, and established some basic rules. And instead of having to worry about like going so many squares or whatever, you could go a couple of inches. And you had to be so close.
The whole point was for her to get to the hamster?
Yeah, to get to the hamster and save it. And
if I was this guy, really... even though it's D&D, at the end, I would tell her that her hamster's in another castle.
So if you really want to get your little kid into D&D, there is a way. You just have to hold their stuffed animals hostage.
Isn't that what most parents have already done?
Yeah, motivation.
And of course, while you're doing that, you'll need, some tools for role playing. And we found one that was actually on Kickstarter last year. It's now available for you to buy. It is called Das Horn. It is a drinking horn.
What's unique about this drinking horn from all the other drinking horns I may or may not have or have stolen?
Well, it is. Not
100% European plastic.
Yes, it's plastic, and that's about it, really. If you want a drinking horn, that has a stand with it too.
Why would I want a drinking horn made out of plastic and not some form of bone or horn?
And it has a neck strap. So if you for some reason do not want to sacrifice some animal, and
yeah, see here, right here is the worst thing. It's worst offender. It's animal friendly.
Oh, no.
It's not made out of rhinoceros horn or poached elephant tusk or the skull of the fallen.
It's also cheaper. We don't disrespect anyone else's lifestyle. It's just that we love the taste of death. Right, Damon?
Yeah, see, that's kind of the thing. A slow, painful death imbues meat with flavor it'll never have otherwise.
It's also cheaper, though. So, potentially at $25. So, if you are in need of a drinking horn, it exists at Death's Horn.
Going to your local cemetery should get you enough bones to make one.
That takes a lot of work, David. You know what? We should have a horn foundry.
We tried doing that, but you had to shut it down because, we almost killed everyone in a 45-mile radius.
This is the next project.
Yeah, I completely misinterpreted what you meant by horn factory.
Horn foundry. We will take bones and make them into drinking horns. Second to last time on the podcast, we mentioned Eon Altar. It is a tabletop video game where you can use your tablets and essentially a mother tablet that you put on a table to interact with the game. So your cell phone or whatever has your character and your character sheet, and the tablet on the table has the playing field, the dungeon, or whatever, and you can see your characters go around with your friends. And it was on Kickstarter. It was asking for $300,000 Canadian dollars, and it only got to $50,000. Its funding period wasn't over yet, but it got canceled by its creator. So, David, you've got the skinny on this. Why'd they pack up shop?
It wasn't really trending as well as they had hoped it was going to be. They weren't quite getting the amount of support they were hoping. And they figured it was probably better to pull it off and try for a different approach to it. They just kind of felt that with, the release of the next-gen consoles and various other things, that people weren't really looking towards their product on Kickstarter.
Yeah, like in terms of timing, like folks already blew a couple $100 on a next-gen console. Why would they want to, donate some money to a Kickstarter campaign? Which, we're facing the same problem as well. You know, it's folks just spent a lot of money during, you know, on the consoles potentially, and during Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which we happen to be launching on, and Christmas is coming up, so it will be it won't be as easy as it could be to reach our funding, but we're up for the challenge.
As it stands, they do have their own little website for Eon Altar for what they're trying to do. So right, they'll keep this place all, you know, updated and things of that nature. So,
and they're looking for other routes of funding and whatnot.
Yeah.
So we'll see. They're not dead. They're just changing the way that they're approaching things. So Eon Altar, we'll keep
tactical
an eye on
withdrawal.
You. Tactical withdrawal, exactly. Speaking of...
withdrawing?
Wait, what?
What?
No, tactical withdrawal.
Something something your father should have done. I mean, what?
Don't worry, David. I'll get you somehow. And your little dog, too. Dwarven Delve. It's an action dungeon crawler with a slight twist. It had a tactical withdrawal this summer when it was originally looking for $60,000 on Kickstarter, but only made, I think it was about 12,000. But now they're back, only asking for 30,000. They've reassessed their funding and all that stuff, and how they're going to use their money and the development times and whatnot. They're only asking for $30,000, and they've already funded, thankfully, because their campaign's over. They've raised $33,000, and the twist here is that the dungeon crawler, you can control the dungeon itself. So it's kind of like a puzzle thing. You can move the rooms of the dungeon. So now if your folks are staring down a baddie, you can like change the whole dungeon, and then he'll be rerouted to somewhere else. So it's an interesting puzzle, kind of a puzzle thing. It'll be out for, let's see, Windows.
They got a bunch of demos out now, and I'm downloading it to give it a shot.
So yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Sounds strange to me. I don't know. You do it through controlling the dungeon itself?
Part of it, yeah. So you control the moment-to-moment actions of the party while also managing the level layout and, like, combo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like kind of like a hexagon kind of thing.
It's Diablo meets Pipe Mania.
Diablo meets Snake. We should work on that. And now we'll segue into these movie things. We've only got one this week. Again, we've got a short show, longer than probably than last time's, but still short because we've been
last week's was like 10 minutes. So this is definitely longer than last week.
Yeah, we've been working to get Quest Foundry out of the door as fast as possible. But now, Anchorman 2.
We didn't do last week's. It was the week before last week.
Right.
So
I meant the last one. Okay, same difference.
Anchorman 2 is nearly upon us, coming out in a few weeks. Yet Ron Burgundy, in some sort of ingenious marketing scheme, went out to middle of nowhere, Nebraska. Well, it's actually Bismarck, Nebraska. And
I'm pretty sure everywhere in Nebraska is the middle of nowhere. Alexis.
Well, it's Nebraska. It's the state that everyone has forgotten.
True. He went out to KX News, a local station over there, and he anchored the news for about 30 minutes as Ron Burgundy. So I mean,
like, he just showed up and like, hi, I'm here, I'm anchoring. Or
I don't know. I mean, well, frankly, they probably had to arrange that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But I mean, they introduced him as Ron Burgundy. He's wearing the suit. He's
in character.
Got
he's
the
in
mustache.
Character. Yeah, and he does it fairly seriously. I only watched about 15 minutes or 10 minutes of the whole 30-minute broadcast, but it's pretty entertaining. You can tell the co-anchor is trying not to laugh throughout the whole thing.
And doing
you
a really
say
bad
it's
job
fairly,
at it, too.
He's fairly serious, though?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't do anything that's hilarious because the network wouldn't like that, probably.
Right. And it's Nebraska.
Yeah, people would get too offended too easily. But, if you want to watch Anchorman, Ron Burgundy do the actual news, you know, with actual events, that is something to certainly keep an eye out for, because I doubt he'll be doing it again. I think it's a genius thing, just like pick
if
a random
station. If he
were
to do it again, what they need to do is put Brick on the weather, too. Screw Ron Burgundy. Like, I like Ron Burgundy, but I want to see Brick actually do the weather.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
I would love to see that. See a whole newscast done with the whole cast, just, you know, actual news and stuff. That'd be pretty sweet.
Only if it was here for
Video Game Geek.
Well, yeah, because we've got our fair share of strange news, so we'd provide some fodder for the cannon.
We'd break their minds with the craziness that happens down in this place.
Florida man does X or Y, insert some crazy story here. Anyway, last week we were also busy with Quest Foundry. Yeah, that's true, but we were also busy picking up Xbox Ones.
Oh,
well, you
mean
and David, because you're both douchebags.
Yeah, I couldn't resist. I thought, you know, I'm not going to get it. It has no launch titles that I really care about. And then it was...
Well, you know, I thought the same thing too, Alexis. And then I played Dead Rising 3.
David, well, Jordan got it, so you don't count. Alexis is like, I'm absolutely not going to get this. Then he's in line, like, the next day. Like, not even before that. You got it before that, right?
Well, yeah, no. Well, sort of. Okay, so... It was 8 p.m. the night before launch, and I thought, man, screw it. I'm going to get it. Life is short. 14-year-old me would be telling me, how are you not getting this? You're now a working adult, and I had to get
and you're 14-year-old, you would kick you in the nads for not playing enough.
Yeah, I mean, 14-year-old,
you would wonder why you censor everything.
14-, 15-year-old me would also remind me that David and I collected Mountain Dew bottle caps to get to try and win an Xbox 360.
I reached into the garbage cans at school to take off the bottle caps.
Me too.
So that was.
I carried a grocery bag around in my backpack to put them in there.
And it was a meta game.
I had over 30,000 points that one day.
we would meet between periods. Hey, how many caps do you have? I found 12. What? Where'd you find them? Yeah, it was
the trash.
Yeah. Or the floor, or like a corner that somehow all the trash had floated to. Anyway, I broke down. I went to the Florida Mall. I was going to go to the Microsoft Store because no one goes to the Microsoft Store. Who would do that? For Microsoft. Anyway.
It was packed.
It was packed, yeah. Thankful. Actually, the line I had to wait in to get, to pay for the thing and get my number and receipt wasn't too long, actually. I did that in about, maybe 20 minutes or so. The line wasn't too long. And then I go out, and I start waiting in line. I get a free T-shirt, and then I think, I'm going to be here for another 2 hours or so. And then that's midnight. Probably have to wait another 40 minutes or so until, you know, people chew through the line. Then I finally get to pick up the thing. I'm going to go home. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to come back at, like, 10 a.m., and pick this thing up when, like, I don't have to wait for a single soul. And that's what I did. And apparently...
Did you have to wait for a single soul?
Nope. And there were apparently just two Xbox Ones left. And they weren't day one editions.
I understand that you, in the minuscule amount of time that you give yourself to play, have been playing Battlefield, right? Battlefield 4?
It's, I mean, I haven't really...
Why don't you regale us with the story of the trouble you had when you first tried to play Battlefield 4? Like,
yes. Well, okay, I get home, I pull the thing out of the box, set everything up, and like, yeah, this is great. And then I gotta install. Son of a bitch! So I had to install... Wait for the thing to install for like an hour. Well, I mean, you could start playing maybe after half an hour, the campaign mode or whatever, because like, you can start playing now, even though it's only installed 20%. But, of course, to play multiplayer, he had to wait till it was fully installed. So that was about an hour and a half. And then
really?
I started...
We only waited 20 minutes here before we could play the multiplayer.
I don't know what happened with this thing, but...
I'm thinking your time perception may have been a little off.
Yeah. Gotta play! No, it took a lot longer than that. 20 minutes till campaign, at least. At any rate, I start playing multiplayer, everything's great, and then I somehow, after a couple matches, I get booted. And then I try and go back in the game, and nothing happens. I can't... the control stick won't let me, you know, just select campaign, multiplayer, anything. So I restart the thing. No luck. And I'm like, what is going on here? Well, it must be some sort of, you know, day one glitch, you know, softwares and all that. Great. Okay, you know what? Let me just uninstall this. Wait, I can't uninstall a game? Of course Microsoft will let you install a game on an Xbox One. That's a feature, not a minor oversight.
You can uninstall games. I've done it.
Oh, can you?
Yes.
Well,
it's just, unfortunately, they don't really give you an easy way to do it. That's the biggest problem right now, is they don't really give you an easy way. You got to know how to get to your, how to gain access to your hard drive. Oh, and they don't really tell you how much you have left either, which is also something that they need to start working on.
Well, do you have to gain access to your hard drive by doing...
First you sacrifice 3 virgins and then a Mexican, and then you go into your systems.
Well, I didn't figure that out, but so I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to nuke it. I wipe the whole damn thing, I install it again, and then the same problem. So I figured, I'm going to go to sleep, hope there's a patch update in the morning, and then I wake up in the morning, I try it again, still the same problem. I think, son of a bitch, what's up with this? And then it dawns on me. I bought a second controller, and I had it plugged in to the Xbox One charger. So when I would turn on the Xbox One, it would automatically register that one as player one. And I was using the second controller. Because,
and
of course,
there's no way you can tell.
No, and there's no way you can tell now, because Microsoft, in its infinite wisdom, had decided to take out the, you know, player indicator on the controller on, you know, on the Xbox Lite, where it showed the top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right. Now it's just one circle. And so, yeah, at least my problem was solved, but not before I was taken down a notch.
All of that headache, having to redo all of that stuff. Oh, your misery. Yeah.
It makes it even better because it was user error.
So overall, I'm pretty happy with this thing. Battlefield's fun. The TV feature's actually pretty slick. Even my parents have started using it. Xbox on, Xbox Watch Discovery. Xbox Mute, it's pretty handy, and you know, it works like a lot of the time. When it tends not to work, you know, the voice recognition is when your TV's volume is blasting because it can't hear you. Now sometimes I get angry with it. You know, you have to say Xbox command. Sometimes I use its full name, Xbox Jose Santos, come down here right now and turn on.
You start turning into your mom, Alexis, Xbox.
Exactly. And I pull out its full name when situations get dire. But it's actually been pretty good. Are you liking it so far, David?
Yeah, I haven't really had too many issues with the system itself. The only real problem I ever had was with Battlefield 4. And it was during the campaign when, for some odd reason or another, it would kick me out of the campaign. And reset all my points I had done for that particular mission, and then throw me right back into my last checkpoint with zero points.
Oh well, I need to say that
it was a load of horseshit, and I don't know why it's doing it, and it pissed me off. But other than that, I still enjoyed Battlefield 4. I think its story and characters are still better than that of Call of Duty.
How's Call of Dog? Yeah,
Call of Dog Ghost is actually better, at least in my opinion, than the Modern Warfare series. At least in terms of story, that could just be because David hasn't had a fix of action movie in a long time. So,
so the story did pick up from what you were telling me. Like, have they gotten any more?
And I had completely missed something early in the game, and it wasn't Russians, Terry. It was South Americans.
Ah.
Well, I have bad news to report that I will have to start my Battlefield 4 campaign all over again because. Relatives who came over were playing the campaign mode and managed to start a new one and overwrite the one I had. So,
was it the relatives I tried to seduce?
Three missions, Alexis?
No. What?
Is that why you only did like 3 missions?
Yep. So they
and
broke.
You were the lowest of everyone on my friends list.
They broke my morale. So I might do it sometime.
At least the campaign's still pretty fun.
It is.
At least compared to most other shooters, it actually is a pretty decent campaign.
Yeah, the last shooter I really, really played was Modern Warfare 2, and the story is a lot better than what I've seen in other shooters.
What's the story involve? Like, can you say anything without spoiling anything?
Dang old Chinese, bad Chinese, bad.
it's basically a Chinese civil war is happening.
Yeah.
The head military guy attempted to assassinate the new Democratic president-elect, which caused him to break off and like a civil war to happen in China with the Americans getting involved and all this kind of bullshit. The story isn't completely done yet. They have a couple story DLCs they'll be releasing later in the year that'll finish the
really.
Yeah, they'll completely finish the campaign in two story DLCs, I think.
Yep, this means Alexis will never know how it ends.
Nope, I'm not going to do that.
I will, because I will be purchasing the DLC, because David likes story DLC. Finished
game.
I'm not a fan of things like map packs, but I love story DLC. And whether or not you don't agree with it, the ending of the campaign does end off on a pretty good note. It's a pretty strong end for a campaign.
Yeah, and Battlefield.
Whether or
has
not
this...
you agree with it, I take it this might be a people might disagree with you.
Yes, mainly because I was alive and I played back in the end of Halo 2, which what I would probably say the most disappointing ending in the history of any game ever. So it has like a it doesn't end as bad as Halo 2, and I don't have to wait 4 years for a sequel to finish it. It's not as bad as Call of Duty's ending, which pissed me off because it was obvious sequel grab. And I it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
For Ghosts, you mean, right?
Yes.
Were you right about it being post-apocalyptic, by the way?
It kind of felt that way, because it didn't show anything other than broken-down cities and a post-apocalyptic-type environment, and it didn't really show anything else.
You were in South America, though, right, David?
Some of them. Some of the missions take place in South America. Some of them take place in space, which is really also the funny thing. It all the missions that take place in America have take place in desolate, bombed-out cities and things of that nature, yet you still have the resources to launch a shuttle into space.
So please
tell
me.
So it's a bit contradictory. Yeah, Alexis had a concern about the Alexis had a concerned rant about the shooting in space business,
please
right?
Tell me, there is no shooting of bullets in a space station, in a spaceship.
The weapons they use are special. It actually, when you look at it, they did at least model the weapons to make it look like they have some sort of like an internal vacuum to the outside, like they're completely at least where you launched a bullet from, the chamber is sealed off from the vacuum, so you can get combustion.
So they really did put some thought into to the whole no fire space no fire no shoot fire stick in space canoe cause explosive decompression.
Yeah, they also put some thought into firing underwater as well, because there are a couple underwater missions that would make Terry shit himself.
Hey, David, you're making me edit out a lot of stuff today.
No, I'm not. You can leave all this in.
1 hour, 2 minutes, 1 hour. The very beginning. All right, so moseying on over into Zelda, which is A Link Between Worlds, which is the other game that came out last week that we've been playing a lot. David,
have you played it? David's been playing it.
I've played it for about 2 hours.
I didn't really get too far before I started binging on Xbox One stuff. Like, I finished Dead Rising, then I went straight to Ghost, then I went straight to Battlefield, and I finished Battlefield. And then I had to start doing schoolwork.
So what's your both of your impressions of Zelda so far?
I'd say it's probably the best handheld Zelda game to date. Probably edging out close to one of the better Zelda games, period. Jordan thinks it's pretty probably the best one he's ever played. So
far, it's pretty dang good. My only complaint.
What makes it so unique, so special? What makes it so good?
Well, hold on. First, my only complaint is the bow and arrow you get. You don't have to worry about arrows. I mean, okay, you stick in the it's magic, and yeah, okay, that
I
works.
Think that's more often than not, though. Like at least in most of the handheld Zelda games.
And I guess I'm used to the console ones with you actually have to look for arrows and stuff.
Well, mainly remember in the other ones you didn't have to worry about losing your items either. So
that reminds me.
And this one, if you die, unless you've completely bought out the item itself, which costs a lot more, You don't get to keep it when you die.
You know, there's a whole bunch of, like, crows or birds in the game, and you see them flying around. I avoid them like the plague, because I can never, never, ever, ever forget the that deep feeling of loss in Majora's Mask when that damn crow comes and takes my goddamn shield or my sword.
Wait,
he makes you buy it back for exorbitant sums of money?
Yep.
I don't remember that. Did that happen when we were playing, or...
No, it never happened when we were playing, because Alexis and I had learned our lesson long before that. When we were playing, you know, Alexis and I had known, but the first time we played it, when we were like 12 years old, we're playing it and we're wandering over to the swamp area, you know, the first dungeon, and all of a sudden, wandering around trying to find the first dungeon, and then all of a sudden, we get our sword, we got our shield, we're happy with it, and then all of a sudden, this bird comes down. We're going to fight it, okay. We slash at it, and then... boom, this bird taps you, and it's like, it stole your sword, get it, or whatever, and then it just flies away. And this bird will steal your money, it will steal your sword, will steal your shield, and then it takes it to the black market shop, where you have to buy your own items back for exorbitant sums of rupees.
Well, you know, at least it's better than having only half a heart left and walking straight into a like.
Now, as far as what makes this thing good, at least for me, so far, I went to the first dungeon, and, well, I guess maybe the second dungeon, and the puzzles, it's not easy, you know, when you start out and you expect the very first thing to be, you know, a piece of cake, and it actually, you know, it's like, huh, this is actually, I mean, it's not like, water temple level, like, how do I get past this thing? But it's challenging, so it's fun.
It does force you to think differently because of the different things available to you now, especially with the addition, like, after the first dungeon, you get access to the turn into a painting to go on the walls thing. And that completely changes up how dungeons are supposed to go around and... work, you know what I mean?
Yep, it gives a one room. Okay, so it gives essentially one room dungeon several levels, or it can at least.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, stick onto the wall and then somehow.
It turns what you thought was something that looked top down in 2D and turns into a 3D plane to work on.
Yep.
Because you can walk through, like, crevices in the walls and things.
Oh, so
like.
This is Paper Mario Zelda Edition?
Yep. It's good stuff, though.
What about you, David? Would you agree with Alexis, or is there anything else you got to add about, like, what makes it so good for you?
I'd say what makes it so good is that it's familiar yet different. It manages to keep what I love so much about, LTTP and things of that nature, and it still manages to throw in twists to make it different.
Twists?
You know what I mean?
Twists? Like, what kind of twists? Like, story
really
twists, or are we talking...
There's plot twists that happens later in the series. Jordan hasn't actually told me about it. My guess is that Zelda actually happens to be a man, but he won't confirm or deny, so I have no idea. I'm talking about, like, gameplay twists. Like, one of them was the introduction of, you know, being able to use walls to get to places. I got stuck after the first temple for about an hour and a half because I couldn't get to the Zora's domain.
And
To get the flippers, and it took me about an hour and a half to realize what I had to do, and it felt so obvious, but I was still thinking in old school Zelda, you know what I mean?
Those are always the most difficult things, though, especially in Zelda games. The obvious solution is always the hardest thing to notice.
And I've got to say, it has a vague kind of Majora's Mask-like feel. You know,
in which way?
It's open.
Yeah, that, and it's kind of...
Like, after the first dungeon, you get a choice. You can do the second one, or you can do the one up north, or you can do the one in the water. And from what Jordan tells me, you only really need to do, one or two dungeons in a certain order in the other world, because you need a certain item, and then it opens up all the other dungeons to do whenever you feel like.
And
so
and also, you see characters that are from there. Okay, well, at least Dampe. Dampe's reminds me...
Well, there have been a lot of recurring characters throughout the Zelda thing, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're the same one.
And it's kind of dark as well. It's not exactly very dark, but it has a vibe about it. And also, in Link's house, there is Majora's Mask on the wall.
Really?
Yep. And I have another suspicion. Okay, so there's a
Do we know when in the timeline this takes place?
Yes.
200 years after LTTP.
And after Ocarina of Time, I think.
But before, so that would be before, like, the branch off into Wind Waker and what was the other one? Twilight Princess, that sort of thing?
Let's see. Hold on, let me pull it up here. Okay, so before we get to that, what I do have in mind is there's a traveling salesman named Ravio, and he's wearing a mask,
a rabbit hood,
a mask or a hood, a rabbit hood, and he sets up shop in your house. And my suspicion,
some weird older man comes to the house of a young boy. Some comes to the house of a young boy wearing a mask. He's like, "I'm going to sell stuff out of your house."
No, he looks young. He looks like a young dude.
Oh, because for a second, it's like, "I'm going to sell stuff out of your house. You're the produce."
Technically, ends up saving your ass and dragging you back to an empty house, which actually ends up being yours. So,
okay, so, yeah. But. I'm trying to find this timeline at the same time. So my suspicion is that he is the salesman, the mask salesman in Majora's Mask. I don't know,
or at least the character, the representation of him.
Yeah, there has to be some like that Majora's Mask Easter egg. It makes me think maybe Nintendo's working on remake or something.
Weren't they supposed to be working on a remake after they did Ocarina of Time?
I have no idea, but
I've been hearing about a Majora's Mask remake for longer than A Link Between Worlds was even thought of.
Maybe we'll
at least
12.
At least in the players' minds.
Okay, so not the mic over. So Nintendo tweeted something out. Says, what major events and characters does Link Between Worlds for 3DS share with Link to the Past? Check out this timeline, and they gave us a timeline. And it looks like it takes place after, you know, Ocarina of Time, A Link to the Past, both the Oracle of Seasons and Ages, and what's that one? I can't tell. And some other one, because the font's too small and I can't tell.
Well, I Link's can't read Awakening. All any Link's of this. Awakening. Say it one more time. It takes place between where and where?
It takes place at the end of Ocarina of Time, A Link to the Past, Oracle of Ages and Seasons, and Link's Awakening. It's at the end of those, I think. Because it's not the far right and the arrows are pointing, you know, that way.
And how long after, though? You said 200 years?
I don't know, David?
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. 200 years is the how long it is after LTTP. I can't remember where I've heard it, but I do remember. I think I read it up. It was part of like the GameSpot or the GI, the game industry, like review of the game stated that this is the first time we've actually had a direct timeline on what happens in this game, and they said it was 200 years after LTTP.
All right, so, yeah, Alexis, don't want to burst your bubble, but there's probably, like, especially considering that Ocarina of Time would have come before that, they're not necessarily, like, the same people, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Naturally, because, you know, Zelda does that all the time, because Link's never...
It always has the representations of them, but yeah.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, there's a link between... Oh, God, here...
Worlds.
Yeah. Between that dude Ravio... And the mask salesman. I know it. I feel it. I feel it in my bones.
Well, I'm pretty sure they're both touchers. But besides that...
Yeah, that's true. They could be.
Look at that. Okay, Ravio, if he's young, whatever. But look at that mask salesman and tell that's me true. You don't get freaky vibes. Like, what was that, like, real more modernized or, like, updated look of Zelda thing that I when we were putting in Majora's Mask on GI, actually, I think I showed that to you. Did you watch that, did you ever watch it, Alexis?
Nope. If I did, I can't remember.
It was the most horrifying thing I have ever seen. That guy. his eyes stare into you and just, oh. Seriously, I'm getting the chills just thinking of it.
But I'm telling you, man.
I'm getting the chills of you remembering me last night, Terry.
There's got to be a link. I mean, I got, I, well, okay, if, probably part of me just wants a Majora's Mask remake or a Majora's Mask sequel or something that has that same kind of like dark quality and all that. I love Majora's Mask so
as long as it's,
I'm very fond of it as well, yeah.
As long as it's remade for the Wii U so we can all congregate at your house to play it again.
And in HD. So we've, I guess that...
Just real quick for the record, it's here. This is what I was talking about. It's, the video that shows up is, it says it's Majora's Mask Wii U trailer. But just the way it looks, especially that mask salesman, is absolutely horrifying.
We shall link it in the show notes, sir, so we can cause people's nightmares and...
Also, the way Link looks as a what's it called? Deku sprite or Deku
Scrub?
Scrub. Yeah, that was it.
Oh yeah, I remember seeing this. Man, do I want a Majora's Mask remake?
Like I had that same feel, and then here he is. Oh my God! Look at him.
Would be awesome. Yeah, anyway, highly recommend you watch the trailer, because if you didn't want a Majora's remake, oh my, you're right.
It definitely looks very fan-made.
Yeah. But it looks good.
Looks good, yeah, it's just not with the feel, it doesn't stick with the spirit of Majora's Mask.
I think it does well enough. It has its own take.
Legitimate or not, the point is he's horrifying.
Yep. I guess that wraps it up for this week's show. We don't have...
I thought we had one last thing. Weren't we going to talk about Terry getting raped by crows?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And that last little thing down at the bottom?
Yeah, that's...
I
was just about to mention that. But Middle-earth, Terry is not very fond of getting beat up by crows. So... Let's see. Journey Through Middle-earth, a Chrome experiment. Naturally, the Hobbit PR machine for the Desolation of Smaug is starting up since it's coming to theaters in just under like 12 or under 2 weeks, depending on when you listen to this. Google helped out with making one of their quote-unquote Chrome experiments, something built totally in HTML5. It is a map of Middle-earth. And you can begin your journey, and you can choose different places. For example, you can go into, the Trollshaws, Rivendell, and choose places on the maps. And they have different games that you can play. For example, in the Trollshaws, you can avoid getting smashed by the trolls. And where were you avoiding these devil ravens?
Now, I do like this thing. It's interesting enough, but I do have some qualms about it in that, there are only, four, even though they show a couple more places, there are only actually, three or four places that you can click on. That and the fact that when they tell you about an area, it's a very, very poorly impersonated Gandalf. But some of the games are interesting, some of the games are fun, and of course they got the Lord of the Rings music, and that is always fantastic. You know what I'm saying? Well, Lord of the Rings Hobbit music, that's always fantastic. Actually, to be fair, since I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, I've been sitting here in Rivendell and popping in and out of Gandalf's death music. But I was in the Rivendell game, most soothing game you're going to play, but the one with the crows, that's Dol Guldur. I have no idea what you're supposed to do there or how it's supposed to work. It told me it wanted me to deactivate my mouse cursor. But
unplug your mouse.
You can't move. All of a sudden, I'm moving forward. I'm running away from something. Then there's Dark's wing flapping. A crow flies into your face. You fall down. And all of a sudden, there's a... noise, and you see your body just getting struggled away by something you can't see. Like, for what this is, it's absolutely horrifying. And I have no idea what's going on or what you're supposed to do, but you know what I'm saying?
Yep. It's pretty interesting. It's nothing,
nothing to write home about.
Yeah, nothing to write home about, really.
Loading times are pretty bad, though.
But it's, yeah, oh yeah, because it's all HTML5, so it takes a long time to load and whatnot. But anyway, worth a look. Middle-earth.thehobbit.com, and you'll find all the Hobbit music you need. So, again, I think that wraps it up this time, unless David finds something that I've missed, except for we got to give one last mention to what we're going to be doing on this Thursday. Right, David?
And it's not your mom, contrary to popular belief.
Here we go again. David, you've managed to get three in this time.
He's on fire.
I think I missed some a couple weeks back. I remember Terry made some a couple weeks back, so I have to start getting some in there.
We didn't have a podcast last week, Alexis. He's been suffering from withdrawal.
That's true.
And then there was that one time when it was me and you talking, Alexis, and we came up with a really good one, or was it me and Jordan? And I can't remember it now, and it's making me mad.
Jordan, by the way, is David's brother for listeners at home. Thursday, I keep trying
to say mentioned Jordan up. Like six times on this podcast, and you choose right now to mention that?
No, I mention it nearly every time.
Yeah, well, about every time I mention him, every podcast, just to make sure all the people who don't actually watch us know who
he is. I mean six times this podcast alone.
Well, you know, got to build up some suspense. So Thursday, December 5th, is the Indienomicon Expo. We've visited a couple Indienomicons, just meetups, past 2 months. And now they're having a big old expo for all the indie game developers that had shown their games at their previous meetups. And now they're going to be in one place in downtown Orlando. You can find out more info at indienomicon.badpilcrow. That's BADPILCROW.com. And, as far as locations and time and whatnot, I think it starts around 7 p.m. or so.
I think it ran 6 to 9, didn't it? It was a three-hour show or something like that.
Yeah, keep posted on our Twitter account, and we shall update as things are happening. And just as a quick teaser as who we'll be interviewing, pretty much nearly all of the game developers there. So we'll be talking to Mr. David Sushil from Turncraft Games, who we interviewed back in October. Ben Crocker of Hoppa Games, folks from Gentleman Squid, Deb First Games, Swiken Media, TBA Games, That Which Is Media, and Live Warfare, and potentially some others. So keep an eye out for that. Friday, we'll have some sort of live stream, again, twitter.com/geekimprovement, and you shall find out where we're streaming, and that'll be released as a podcast probably on Saturday or Sunday, depending on when Alexis has time to edit it.
Well, you know, we can't edit it. It needs to be live and uncut.
Well, yeah, there might be
it's
some...
It's Geek Improvement, bigger, longer, uncut, Alexis.
So, we'll probably have to edit it a bit for downtime in between, getting folks interviewed. But
that's going to be where the fun parts happen.
Well, that'll be where
it's going to be me, you, and Terry bitching about stuff.
If we can keep it lively, then we'll leave it in. So you can follow us on Twitter.
David's goal for Thursday.
Keep it lively. At Geek Improvement. You can send us an email at podcast@geekimprovement.com. Or call in at 65 Ring Geek. That's 657-464-4335. We'd like to hear from you. Just let us know what you think about the podcast and or Quest Foundry. You can follow me on Twitter and find out what I'm having for lunch at Alexis Santos. You can find David at...
Oh, you'll find me at He Who Smells Pie at Twitter.
And you can find Terry at his email at terry@geekimprovement.com. And please do not forget, give Quest Foundry a look. That's questfoundry.com. And we hope to see you next week after making good progress on the Kickstarter. See ya.